Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 18th day of April 2020. I'm your host, Mark Kauf. And at this point, I'm honestly not sure how long it's been since we had a pretense of lawful constitutional government. Still, though, it's no less of a concern that most Americans don't seem to have figured it out yet. And along those lines, it certainly has been quite a week. For starters, we continue to watch the long setup that preceded now the fastest descent into depression, economic collapse, and it would seem, if successful, the greatest worldwide tyranny in human history. Think I'm even exaggerating? Buckle up and stay tuned. Let's start here with a story that the alternative press, and for that matter, actual scientific journals, have been trying to get out in spite of wasteful propaganda blitzes for quite a while. Yes, folks, you knew it. The Wuhan coronavirus was bioengineered as a weapon by somebody, perhaps by several somebodies, and released either accidentally or on purpose, and sometimes in a world gone absolutely insane, it's almost hard to tell the difference. But in any case, over the weekend, the Daily Mail seems to have blown the whistle on something that's been a long time coming anyway. Here's the money quote from that story, although the headline seems to have undergone some strategic re-examination since it first came out. Documents obtained by the Daily Mail on Sunday show the Wuhan Institute of Virology, that biosafety level 4 lab, undertook coronavirus experiments on mammals captured more than 1,000 miles away in Yunnan, funded by, wait for it, a $3.7 million grant from none other than the U.S. government. Turns out, by the way, the Daily Mail is kind of soft-pedaling this part. It was under the Obama regime. And it goes on to say that sequencing of the COVID-19 genome, about which they don't tend to say a whole lot, evidently, has traced it to bats found in Yunnan's caves. And all of this comes after that newspaper revealed last week that ministers in Britain now fear that the pandemic could have been caused by a virus, leaking from the institute. But hey, the timing was just about perfect in hindsight, wasn't it? And senior government sources went on to say that while the balance of scientific advice, yeah, sure, was still that the deadly virus was first transmitted to humans from a live animal market, come on, in Wuhan, an accident at the laboratory in the Chinese city was, quote, no longer being discounted. The word they would have had to use here is ridiculed, you know, because it's a conspiracy theory, and only tinfoil hat wearers actually read scientific journals and conclude that what the waste room is telling them is a bald-faced lie. Still, though, the Mail at least has to pay some type of homage to the official narrative, including tripe like this, that according to one unverified claim, it's possible science at the Biosafety Level 4 Institute, they don't put that in at this point, could have become infected after being sprayed with blood containing the virus, and then, idiots that they are, passing it on to the local community. And yeah, part of the problem your host has with BS like this is that so much of it violates Occam's razor. In other words, just what really strains credulity. But what really raises eyebrows at this point is how fast the waste stream media is closing ranks to try to maintain some of their pretty well trash credibility. Here's one from Joe Pompeo at Vanity Fair entitled, Inside the Viral Spread of a Coronavirus Origin Theory. Yes, says the subheading, the Wuhan Biosafety Laboratory, well, at least they admit that exists, bat blood, a wet market, scientists, pangolins? Politicians looking for someone to blame, the perfect ingredients, in other words, for a story that won't go away, in spite of their best efforts. And this one begins, like so many of these propaganda CYA pieces, by pointing at Senator Tom Cotton, who's a Republican, don't you know? And since they make a big deal out of that, you know his credibility must be suspect, who's been on Fox News and floated what they call an alternative theory. One that ought to be obvious, at least if you read some of the scientific journals, that they don't want you to. By the way, you may be wondering, just what is a pangolin? Well, no doubt CNN will soon be educating you on that score, but it's a scaly anteater. And if you're not willing to believe that this booga 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 novel virus never before seen in the entire universe just happened to come through a roundabout mechanism from bats to probably pigs to a Wuhan food market and... How eventually did it get to humans? Well, maybe it took a scaly anteater from somewhere in Asia or Africa to help it make the jump. That is, if you're not willing to believe, guys in white lab coats, probably funded by Big Brother somewhere or other, were able to do a little genetic modification in the lab. Well, as everybody wants to point the fingers at Tom Cotton, let's go there. He was probably, alone among those on the Senate floor, willing to point out something that should have been obvious in a less politically correct world. Another possible origin theory. As Vanity Fair puts it, that nasty, foul seafood market was not far, he noted, from a major biosafety lab. He told Maria Bartiromo back on February 16th, quote, "We don't know where it originated, but we do know that we have to get to the bottom of that. And we also know that just a few miles away from that food market is China's only biosafety level 4 super laboratory that researches human infectious diseases." Now, he continued, "We don't have evidence that this disease originated there." Well, we didn't then. We now do. "But because of China's duplicity and dishonesty from the beginning, we need at least to ask the question to see what the evidence says. And China right now is not giving any evidence on that question at all." Unquote. Well, folks, a lot's changed in the intervening nearly 2 months. But Vanity Fair is still trying to point fingers, saying Cotton didn't say so outright, but there was an unmistakable subtext to his commentary implying that the SARS-CoV-2 virus could even have been man-made. What? Why, who could imagine such a thing? How dare anybody suggest that communist governments anywhere would have an interest in creating bad biological weapons that might be able to be highly transmissive and kill lots of people? Quote, "We have such laboratories ourselves in the United States," he said, "run by our military, in large part done for preventative purposes or trying to discover vaccines or protect our own soldiers. China's obviously very secretive about what happens at the Wuhan laboratory." Unquote. Well, says Vanity Fair, this theory added a scary new layer to Donald Trump's blame China strategy, and Cotton didn't pull it out of thin air. No, folks, that should be obvious. The theory had been circulating for weeks, mostly in, here comes, conservative media and shadowy Facebook posts. But now, the Arkansas senator had committed the sin of amplifying it on a massively influential national media platform, and the journalistic establishment took notice. Yeah, and they sprung into action, too. And here they quote the stalwarts of the far-left so-called journalistic integrity crowd, like the WAPO, which said, "Tom Cotton keeps repeating a coronavirus conspiracy theory that was already debunked." Hey, didn't they say the same thing about Hitler? And Russia, 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 and the FBI, and Crossfire Hurricane, and, well, you get the picture. They lie a lot. And the New York Times similarly declared, "Senator Tom Cotton repeats fringe theory of coronavirus origins," whereupon, says Vanity Fair, experts, and you know what that means, came forth with buckets of cold water for Cotton's remarks. Listen to this one, quote, "It's a skip in logic to say it's a bioweapon that the Chinese developed and intentionally deployed, or even unintentionally deployed," one of them told the WAPO. Adding that exposure by way of a lab accident was also highly unlikely. Well, that at least is true. Anytime you have this strategic of a release, you can probably figure somebody done it. Even FDR pointed that out. Nothing happens in politics by accident. Quote, "If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way." Unquote. And that, of course, is the leftist darling, folks. Well, it seems even before the Daily Mail came out with their big admission, expose, and Vanity Fair, of course, has to quote this one from David Ignatius at the WAPO. "How," says the headline, "did COVID-19 begin? Its initial origin story is shaky." Well, that's quite an admission coming from them. But Ignatius took the attitude that, well, this is a propaganda battle, so these kinds of things are maybe to be expected. The story, it says, of how the novel coronavirus emerged in Wuhan, China, has produced a nasty propaganda battle between the U.S. and China. The two sides have traded some of the sharpest charges made between two nations since the Soviet Union back in 1985 falsely accused the CIA of manufacturing, what, another bioweapon? Yeah, AIDS. U.S. intelligence officials, of course, he says, don't think the pandemic was caused by deliberate wrongdoing. We'll come back to that one. He, too, quotes Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, saying good science, bad safety, in a February 16th tweet. saying it might be more likely than either of the other possibilities, an engineered bioweapon or a deliberate release. But lately, the story notes, President Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo have added to the bile by describing the coronavirus as the Chinese virus and the Wuhan virus, which is pretty descriptive and pretty apropos, don't you think, respectively. China, though, has dished wild, irresponsible allegations of its own. On March 12th, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liang Xiao charged in a tweet that it might be the U.S. Army who brought the epidemic to Wuhan, retweeting an article that claimed without evidence that U.S. troops might have spread the virus when they attended the World Military Games in Wuhan back in October 2019. But China retreated, it says, on March 22nd, when their U.S. ambassador told Axios on HBO that such rumors were crazy on both sides. Well, says the WAPO columnist, to be clear, U.S. intelligence officials, sick, think there's no evidence whatsoever.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
That the coronavirus was created in a laboratory as a potential bioweapon. Good grief, and how stupid do they think their readers actually are? Strike that. Okay, maybe the answer's already clear. But still, the WAPO continues, how did the outbreak occur? Solving this medical mystery, they say, is important to prevent future pandemics, or maybe to get people to swallow the global police state that they're building on this one. What's increasingly clear, though, they say, is that the initial origin story, that the virus was spread by people who ate contaminated animals at the Wanan Seafood Market in Wuhan, is shaky. And somehow, folks, to punctuate that little bit of imbecility with the word duh seems like a bit of an understatement. So yeah, bring on the scaly anteaters. But wait, and now we have to head back to Vanity Fair, which said, quote, an opinion section column in the WAPO and even a British tabloid story are hardly enough to give the Wuhan lab theory full waste stream credibility. Whoa, full stop here. How's that for self-serving, even pitifully transparent, propaganda? As if the truth has anything to do with whether the waste stream finds it credible or even bothers to report on it at all. But the reports, they say, are a world of intrigue, nevertheless, and the theory's journey through the media ecosystem is fascinating in and of itself. Funny, though, in the several next lengthy paragraphs, they don't even once mention the scientific journals that have talked about HIV proteins being bioengineered with gene splicing into a coronavirus SARS foundation, much less our respectable web pages like Natural News and Zero Hedge, and a number of medical professionals, some with their own platforms, having reported on those scientific journals, were subsequently banned from various socialist media platforms, and evidently even their search results discounted. But as the week wore on, the media disinformation went into overdrive. For example, from the very same Daily Mail, nearly 30% of Americans believe the conspiracy theory that coronavirus was created in a lab. Gee, maybe because it was, with Republicans twice as likely to believe the myth than Democrats, says a new poll from Pew. Oh, and all of this, it says, is despite the unsubstantiated theory, in spite of the fact that it's been supported by multiple scientific papers, being widely discredited. And obviously that means by the WAPO, CNN, and the New York Times. The Pew survey results, it said, show that misinformation continues to spread more, despite public health officials, Achtung, repeated mandates, well, attempts, it says, to dispel the myths and silence any alternatives to the waste stream narrative in a bid to save lives. Achtung, this will save your life if we don't kill you and put you in a concentration camp first. While it says the origins of the virus are still being investigated by scientists, kind of like man-made global warming. Question is, who pays their bills? Experts! And the only experts that they want to count, of course, are the experts that they want you to believe. Believe that COVID-19 likely first originated in bats and then was transmitted to humans through an unknown intermediate animal, which may have been armored anteaters or maybe pink unicorns. Personally, folks, I'm more partial to the flying pigs explanation. Kind of combines all of the big whoppers here, doesn't it? And published by Fact Hank. You gotta love this BS. The survey's results show that misinformation continues to spread more rapidly than the virus itself. Despite the fact that, yeah, here they're saying it again, it's been widely discredited. Obviously, they're still channeling Adolf. Just keep repeating that big lie over and over and over again, and eventually people may believe it. Especially if you don't let anybody else say anything different. And are you ready for this? As many as 23% of Americans, almost 1 in 4, believe the deadly disease was created intentionally. Why, some of them may even know that there's bioweapons research being conducted by labs just like this in multiple countries around the world. Surely none of them want to create deadly bioweapons intentionally now, do they? Sometimes, folks, I do have to wonder just who they think is more stupid. The people they think are going to believe this, or the people they got to write it. Well, I did spend quite a bit of time yesterday on why the claim that the bioweapon hypothesis has been debunked, just like the Tooth Fairy, the Green New Deal, and man-made global warming, is utter BS. And that's putting it quite a bit more politely than they deserve. Because in this case, that doesn't even stand for bad science. The simple truth of the matter is, there are multiple scientific papers, you can find them online, they've been around for about 2 months at this point, that indicate that the COVID-19 genome contains biosequences that contain, quote, HIV insertions, providing gain of functions from a bioweapons engineering point of view, and that, and here I'm quoting again, are, quote, unlikely to be fortuitous in nature. In other words, you have to be just a little touched, or maybe gullible, to believe they happened by accident. Do honest scientists argue about interpretation of data and conclusions? You betcha. But that's not at all what's being done here. Now, let's be clear, folks, since we're talking about so-called scientists here, or even people that claim to be honest reporters, does that prove anything? Does that prove that it was bioengineered? Of course not. There's still a vanishingly small chance that it did happen by accident. But what does Occam's razor say? And on the other hand, to claim that it was debunked and proven that they couldn't possibly have been made in a lab is downright idiotic. Because really, you'd think even journalists would know that it's impossible to prove a negative, much less debunk a plausible hypothesis by simply ignoring evidence you don't like. But they have been getting away with it now for quite a while. And at this point, folks, I'll pause with a brief summary in case you haven't been listening to this program before, but have instead been trying to get news from the likes of CNN or MSNBC. Dr. Francis Boyle, one of those who drafted the Biological Weapons Act, according to a number of stories dating back to at least early February, admitting that the 2019 Wuhan coronavirus is an offensive biological warfare weapon and that the World Health Organization at that point even already knew about it. And it's not like their perfidy hasn't been exposed in the interim. For their part, Zero Hedge has published a number of articles documenting the timeline. One, from March 2nd, 2020, is entitled, What Are the Odds? A Timeline of Facts Linking COVID-19, HIV, and Wuhan's Secret Bio Lab, with all kinds of interesting details about the engineering of the bioweapon, including references to the scientific paper from India, dated January 27th of this year, or the paper from BioRxiv at Cold Spring Harbor Lab entitled Uncanny Similarity of Unique Inserts in the 2019 nCoV Spike Protein to HIV-1, GP120, and GAG. That, of course, was the largely now ignored paper that said the finding of four unique inserts in what's now called COVID-19, all of which have similarity to amino acid residues in key structural proteins of HIV-1, is, quote, unlikely to be fortuitous in nature, unquote. That paper survived where earlier papers didn't, arguably, because they didn't try to translate that into standard English and use a term like bioengineered. Since then, as well, we've seen a couple of documentaries as well on the subject. And you may recall that Zero Hedge was ultimately banned forever and ever from the likes of Twitter, at least allegedly, for publishing a piece entitled, Is This the Man Behind the Global Coronavirus Pandemic? Way back on January 29th this year, identifying the leader of the Bat Virus Infection and Immunization Group at the Wuhan Biosafety Level 4 lab, Dr. Peng Zhao. And isn't it funny how not a one of these bits of mainstream propaganda attempting to debunk the bioweapon hypothesis even bothers to mention things like ACE2 receptors or keywords like gain-of-function mutation. Suffice it to say, folks, that the WAPOs claim that U.S. intelligence officials are saying there's no evidence whatsoever that the coronavirus was bioengineered, or is a lab creation, in other words, is pretty much utter bullshit, even considering the source. Or maybe we should say batshit nowadays. Well, before we move on, I guess it's important to go back and touch base again with the Daily Mail piece, and remembering in the process the 80-20 rule. Yeah, you really want to sell an even bigger lie. It helps to package 80% truth along with the whopper you want to get people to swallow, or in this case, the bat guano. Here again, the main point. For months, China has been claiming that the coronavirus, now known as COVID-19, or better, COVID-1984, originated from a wet market in Wuhan. But evidence shows, they say, that the Institute of Virology in Wuhan undertook coronavirus experiments on mammals, including bats, backed by grants from none other than the National Institute of Health. No, not the Chinese version, the one paid for by Big Brother America's newly printed fiat dollars. And here they do get more credit than most of the U.S. propagandas. The results of the NIH-backed research, it says, were published in a 2017 study entitled Discovery of a Rich Gene Pool, hey, how wonderful for your bioweapon research, of bat SARS-related coronaviruses provides new insights into the origin of SARS coronavirus. And importantly, the report continues, all of the building blocks of SARS-CoV genome, including the highly variable S gene, ORF8, and ORF3, could be found in the genomes of different SARS-RCoV strains from this single location. Additionally, they say Indian researchers scanned the novel coronavirus genome and found unique cell identification and membrane-binding proteins located in the HIV genome, suggesting that 2019 nCoV is, are you ready for it? Yeah, you'll hear it here, not so much on the WAPO CNN, NPR, or MSNBC circuit. It's a laboratory-made chimera, but they withdrew their findings after receiving, to put it mildly, pressure from China. And what do you bet, folks, it wasn't just from China. And here we turn to a summary from Jamie White at InfoWars, who notes that there's a 2015 article from The Scientist that describes concerns scientists had then with the idea of creating a coronavirus chimera out of a lab, which resulted in a moratorium, or so we were told, on gain-of-function coronavirus research in the United States. Hey, isn't it cool that the communist Chinese regime in China has such great relations with the communist Obama regime in Washington? All of which, says the story, may explain why, back in 2015, the Obama regime and the National Institute of Health, SICK, under Dr. Anthony Fauci, hey, have we heard that name somewhere else, outsourced all of this nasty research, well, at least some of this nasty research, to the Wuhan Virology Lab by awarding them $3.7 million in research grants for scientific gain-of-function coronavirus experimentation on bats. And would you believe, all of this coincides with the fact that Bill Gates, we've heard that name a lot lately too, ran a coronavirus pandemic simulation back in October. Yeah, we've talked about it. It's called Event 201, which resulted in, at least in computer simulation, a death toll of 65 million people over 18 months. Perhaps more importantly, folks, it enabled them to further the agenda of a new world order globalist lockdown and tyrannical, well, gain-of-function dictatorship. And as a number of websites have pointed out, bioweapons expert Dr. Francis Boyle confirmed most of these points in an interview he did with the Alex Jones Show last month, arguing that the likelihood of the novel coronavirus outbreak originating from that lab in Wuhan, China, was extremely high, and warning that it was probable that COVID-19 was a bioweapon leaked from that lab. The alternative, of course, here might be that it was a bioweapon that wasn't leaked at all. By Friday, Professor Luc Montagnier, the winner of the 2008 Nobel Prize for Medicine, joined the rising tide of conspiracy theorists by saying that the SARS-CoV-2, as they call it, quote, could only have been created in a lab. All of which, say the conspiracy theorists, not without a significant foundation at this point, suggest that the individuals and institutions that helped China develop this nasty gain-of-function research are the very same people now telling us to stay locked in our homes, destroying the U.S. economy in the process, and to prepare for mandatory vaccinations and, of course, implantable microchips to make sure you've had your mandatory vaccination, as well as to accept the National ID Immunity Card in order to be allowed to participate in whatever society they've been working so hard to bring coming down upon us. And we'll pick it up there when we get back.
Our babies before they are born. Stand up and be kind and come and sound the alarm. Aren't you one of God's children? But nothing but the devil's pawn. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you on?
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and where I want to go next is one of the most important things we can talk about, given where we are. And that means not just the oh-so-well-planned and now-executed police state, but finally, the fact that there are some people getting disgusted and starting to push back. In other words, the protests. Because there are, in fact, some good news things going on around the country. In Raleigh, North Carolina, there was a big protest. The Raleigh PD told people who wanted to come into town and protest because their livelihoods and lives and families and everything they've worked for, all those lives were being destroyed. Achtung, no. Protesting, said the PD, in violation of their oath, obviously, was non-essential. And they threatened to arrest people and all kinds of other things in order to keep their police state intact. In Michigan, you have one of the nastiest, most evil governors in the country. And, of course, as we know, that's saying something. The scumbag who originally said, no, you peons aren't allowed to have seeds, is now pushing other edicts. Gretchen Whitmer is the name of the person who wants to be the vice presidential nominee for creepy quid pro Joe Mr. Senile Biden. And as a result of all of this, you have other sheriffs, now in Michigan, standing up and saying, hey, it's not just the Second Amendment that we took an oath to preserve and protect and defend, but also they're not going to strictly enforce the governor's anti-constitutional, aggressive stay-at-home orders, actually writing a letter and emphasizing that they took an oath to uphold and defend the Michigan Constitution, as well as the Constitution for these United States. And the point is to, quote, ensure that your God-given rights are not violated. And, of course, the story that I'm looking at here from Breitbart goes on to describe all of the verboten things that the peons are not allowed to do, like make non-essential visits to neighbors, friends, or relatives. They're also demanding that retailers, Achtung, are forbidden from selling items that Big Brother, in her wonderful, wizened, godlike understanding, deems to be non-essential. That includes everything from furniture and child car seats, because you're not going to be allowed to travel either, I guess, to gardening items and home improvements. Hey, if you're sitting at home, what else are you going to do, right, as you watch your entire life savings go down the drain? Michigan sheriffs said that they think just maybe she is overstepping her executive authority. Gee, do you think? In Germany, however, it's worse than this. There is a medical lawyer, a woman named Beate Bonner. Maybe I'm butchering that. But anyway, she has previously, in a press conference, decried German lockdowns as being flagrantly unconstitutional, according to their constitution, and called for peaceful protests. So what did Big Brother's Gestapo do? Kind of reminiscent of the 1930s. Yeah, they hauled her off, arrested her, abused her, and then forcibly committed her to a, hey, didn't this sound like something the Soviets pioneered? Psychiatric institution. Maybe there's no surprise there either. Where I'm leading up to with is this story, and that is that the very same people who are pushing the vaccines, pushing the mark of the beast and so forth, and honestly, Dr. Fauci, and I hate to use that terminology here, this guy is anything but a doctor in the sense of healing. But he, along with his comrade Bill Gates, are now, well, it's called a tag team by Ethan Huff at Natural News, calling for digital certificates of coronavirus immunity. Achtung, if you want to live, you will take the mark. Und, he has now signaled that Americans may eventually, if they're good little slaves, be able to return back to normal if they have immunity. Well, what does that mean? You must be vaccinated, and you got to carry around digital proof of vaccination, or, again, a mark, everywhere you go. This time, it wasn't Bill Gates talking about this abomination. It was Fauci himself on CNN's New Day program, where he stated that requiring digital vaccine certificates is a possible outcome. That is, if they're able to successfully make sure nobody actually has zinc available or doesn't, in fact, get really, really scared and kowtow to all of Big Brother's whims. Anyway, the possible outcome, the one they're pushing, is, quote, one of those things that we talk about when we want to make sure we know who the vulnerable people are and are not. I'm going to suggest we know who the vulnerable people are, folks. Those are the ones who are disarmed, ignorant, and blind, don't know what their rights are, so therefore they don't have any, and they're willing basically to be sheeple and force-fed whatever Big Brother wants them to know or not know or bend over and take. Said Fauci, quote, this is something, meaning the digital certificates, the mark, this is something that's being discussed, he said, although you know he didn't call it the mark, right, any more than they're going to call the lockdown medical martial law. I think, though, it might actually have some merit. Oh, he not only thinks it has some merit, folks, this was the plan all along. Fauci says soon there'll be a rather large number of tests available for the Wuhan COVID-1984 coronavirus, but this is funny in a way that wasn't so disgusting. There's a potential problem, he admits, because that might be difficult to validate them as accurate, seeing how wildly inaccurate the early COVID-19 tests actually were. False positive, false negative. You don't have it, but you do. You do have it, so you booga-booga-booga aren't allowed out, but hey, there's nothing wrong with you, and so forth. Now, I'm going to suggest, ultimately, let's not kid ourselves, whether the tests are accurate or not is immaterial. What matters is, matter of fact, if they had a test that simply proclaimed everybody had been exposed to COVID-1984 and therefore was, you know, locked in, why not? It serves the purposes. That way everybody can be mandatorily vaccinated. And of course, when they vaccinate you, then they'll have the digital marker that they're looking for. So if you understand, here's the key, folks. The point has nothing to do with protecting the peons. It's about making sure everybody is vulnerable and that everybody submits. So if the tests are wildly inaccurate and people can't tell because, hey, the test is the god that you're going to serve, it doesn't matter, does it? All right. Also, others are pointing out, we'll come back to this, we may have food riots as soon as May. And as the Ethan Huff story concludes, Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci simply want to force the mark of the beast on you in the name of, allegedly at least, stopping the coronavirus. No, what they want to stop is truth, justice, the American way, freedom, and the worship of any other god other than the ones they see in the mirror. Okay, and by the way, once you have the mark, you might be approved, deemed essential. Because remember, Big Brother gets to decide what's essential and what's not, who gets to live and who doesn't, who gets to have freedom, or at least able to move around under government authority and who doesn't. And, well, the mandatory vaccination seems to be a big part of that. Gates, as you remember, has stated he wants everybody to have a quantum dot tattoo microchip inserted into their bodies that would not only, allegedly at least, clear them of the dreaded COVID-1984, but also function as the digital ID, ID 2020, that they're also pushing. That would include the entirety of a person's medical records and anything else they want you to have to wear on your right hand or forehead in order to be allowed to buy, sell, trade, or even live. And, of course, the problem is, this story mentions it too, even though simple zinc is already proving to be an excellent preventative or even a cure for the COVID-19, no vaccines required, we know what's wrong with that. Now, the Washington Times, in an editorial, put it this way. I think it's a pretty good comment. The corporate elite that runs things behind the scenes has turned an illness no more dangerous than the common flu. Well, that's debatable. If it's a bioengineered illness, you got to figure they did something right here. And I have suggested, remember, the Chinese are big, as are the Americans, in the bioweapons area, and chemical weapons especially, on what are called binary weapons. You release part one, get everybody infected with it, but it stays more or less benign until you release part two, and then the hammer drops. So don't think for a second, folks, that there isn't a real possibility of a second wave. We've already been hearing about that elsewhere in the world, and the second wave might be something that is introduced. Okay, so I dispute whether it's no more dangerous than the common flu, but the point is still made. Into a pretext that they've now turned it for an enormous expansion of government power and an enormous transfer of money, well, what now passes for it anyway, from the citizenry to the corporate elite. Now here's the telling part of the quote. Most people still believe, despite so much evidence to the contrary, that the government and the corporate media do not lie, could not possibly lie, especially about the really big things. Obviously, most of America has never read Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, where he said, tell them the biggest lie you can. The big lie is the kind of thing that people will say, oh, they wouldn't possibly lie about anything that big, would they? And they'll swallow it, hook, line, and sinker. All right, well, the story says, in reality, it's the government and the corporate media that lie about everything, especially about the big things. Okay, and all I can say to that is, duh. Now, before we get to the bottom of the hour and talk about the things that I really want to focus on, which is, all right, given all this nastiness, one more time, what do we need to be doing, especially right now? I do want to mention one or two good news items, and this is related to the idea of law. Because I'm going to suggest, again, as I have suggested since I started doing this show, that if you don't know what your rights are, you don't have any. But more importantly, at least in terms of this conversation, not in general, understand what is law, or what law is, and what law is not. I frequently quote Amsler 16, which says that a law in violation of the Constitution, the supreme law, is no law. It confers no privileges, doesn't do anything, basically. It's invalid, not from the day it's so ruled by some court. It's invalid from the day it was allegedly passed, and so forth. And, of course, those of us who understand what the basis of law is in the United States, that there are certain self-evident truths, that among these are the truth that we have a creator, and he has endowed us with life, liberty, certain rights, in other words, and the right to property, all of which are now being taken away in the name of Booga Booga Booga, a different God, the God of coronavirus. If we don't understand what law is and is not, and what is being called law in the formerly free United States most certainly is not law anymore. Some sheriffs are recognizing it. Some people are pointing it out. I'm going to get to an article after the break. Even Andrew Napolitano, a guy that I once admired a lot more than I have of late, because he seems to have kind of turned his back on so much of what he once espoused, kind of like the president, if you think about it. But in any case, if we don't understand what is law and what is not, we're going to fall victim to what is not. So, back to the good news. President Trump has now decided, somebody at least in there, read a copy of the Constitution and came up with something kind of innovative. Now, this is from Sundance at the Conservative Treehouse originally, and it has to do with Article 2, Section 3, as it turns out, of the Constitution. Article 2, of course, has to do with the powers of the president, and if you remember what Article 2 starts out, it has to do with the State of the Union message. President will, from time to time, give to Congress information about the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration various things that he may consider necessary and expedient. But this is the place where most people quit reading. He may, on extraordinary occasions, hey, is the entire United States destruction and economic downfall, would that be an extraordinary occasion? Arguably. He could convene both houses, or either of them, okay? Or, here's the other side of the coin, in the case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he can adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. Now, did you hear that? The president literally has the power to say, you know what? Congress is, for whatever reason, stupid, idiotic, not doing their job, violating the Constitution. Well, they're doing all of that, and all of that's true. Why hasn't he done this already? But in any case, he can, in fact, just plain adjourn them. Now, here's the rest of the story. This is the part that's kind of interesting. The president this week warned Congress that he might actually go read that Constitution and invoke Article 2, Section 3, because of the COVID-1984 crisis and the fact This will bear on a number of things, listen to the specifics here, that his administrative positions have been delayed by various blockages in the House and the Senate for more than 2 years. I'm looking at the list of people who should have been indicted and haven't been, and should be behind bars wearing orange jumpsuits, lock them up. No, none of them have been locked up. And now we watch Anthony Fauci and Birx and others essentially saying, destroy this economy, tear it down. We could care less. Oh, we are going to booga, 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 be afraid, be very afraid of something which, well, isn't going to cause nearly as many deaths as what we're going to do to supposedly fix it. I've been talking about this for months at this point, and I think it's increasingly obvious that the die is cast with respect to the economy. There are those that say if it's not open by May, stick a fork in it. I'm afraid that we may have actually stuck the fork in it, but still can't hurt to try at least to get it open by May, and we'll see. In any case, the story goes on to say the pandemic, or the plandemic, would seem, obviously, to qualify as an unusual circumstance where recess appointments might be needed, valid, and justified. In other words, fire Fauci. Fire a whole bunch of scumbags. I'd fire most of the FBI, almost all of the well, let's just say if it has three letters and it's involved in an unconstitutional activity, which almost all of them are, fire them all. And then the Senate, because they have never adjourned, has never allowed recess appointments, and they're blocking the ones that he's been trying to get in. So the disingenuous of the president's opponents has seldom been more clear, say a number of pundits. And by the way, they ought to be defunding the WHO, the World Health Organization, too, communist Chinese puppets, or is it the other way around? Well, it's nice to see the president at least talking about it, but wait a minute, he's been talking about all kinds of things for a long time. What I'd like to see is the president actually do something, lock them up, fire some SOBs, get rid of a whole bunch of scumbags who are destroying the entire fabric of the nation, but we'll believe it when we see it, right? From there is where I turn to some of the other stories. Here is okay, given what we're at and all the things that are going on, what we need to understand. Starting, of course, with this idea of the rule of law. And I want to go here first. I mentioned Andrew Napolitano, who writes about death in slow motion in his most recent piece and says, during the past month, as Americans have been terrified of the coronavirus, we have another demon. Now, that's an appropriate term. Ready to pounce. It's a demon of our own creation, and it, of course, is the well-known tendency of human beings to succumb to the, well, lust for power, the temptation of totalitarianism. And it's slowly, he says slowly, I'd say for crying out loud, where you been? It's rapidly bringing about what's left of the death of personal liberty in our once free society. He goes on to talk about how back when we had a constitution, there was this thing called the separation of powers. You can see it in Article 1, 2, and 3 of the Constitution, the division into three branches: legislative, executive, and judicial. Now, I have pointed out, and I would encourage you, if you haven't seen this, turn to Isaiah chapter 33. It's an easy one, Isaiah 33 in the Bible, and read through it, and you'll see down about in the 20s there, it says, I am your judge, I'm your king, I am your lawgiver. And famously, Madison said, and in his hands only can we trust such powers to be combined. And in the hands of any fallen men, maybe it's best to keep them separate, which is where this idea comes from. And furthermore, he went on to say, hey, if you put all those three powers together in any one branch or individual or oligarchy or whatever you call it, what you better call it is tyranny. And guess what, folks? Look at the IRS. Look at various three-letter agencies that make the law, adjudicate their own law in their own so-called courts, even though they're bogus as all get out, and then set their own fines, issue their regulatory decrees. Wow. There it is. Tyranny on a massive scale. So, this is where the Andrew Napolitano gets onto the key here of late, and as you've noticed, a whole bunch of people around the country are figuring this out and deciding, hey, maybe we'd better protest, even though it's not currently allowed, while we still can. Remember when the government actually was supposed to allow people to petition for a redress of grievances? Of course, they were supposed to allow freedom of worship, too. These orders, says Napolitano, stay at home, Achtung, close your business, don't run in the park, don't go to church, do practice socialist distancing and so forth. These things aren't laws that can legitimately carry a criminal penalty for a violation. They're a violation of the very concept of the Bill of Rights, those fundamental things. They're guidelines, he says, correctly. They don't have the force of law. And a governor or a mayor can no more craft a law and then assign a punishment for its noncompliance, Achtung, because he thinks he's a dictator, or she in the case of Michigan, than the courts could command the military or the police. Well, in some jurisdictions, guess what? Public-private partners that they are? Yeah, it's not like we haven't seen this before. But anyway, even if legislative bodies did try to order churches and businesses to be closed, and mayors and governors tried to enforce those laws, they would in fact, obviously, at least obvious to anybody who's not a snowflake, they would be profoundly unconstitutional. Now, in case you haven't read it lately, there's something called the Free Exercise Clause. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the, free exercise thereof, up until now. And since when, continues Napolitano, were bureaucrats or oathbreakers given the power to decide what of your activities or desires or pursuits are essential? Not only did no constitution actually give them that power, but it's pretty clear that the point of the Bill of Rights was to prohibit exactly that. In other words, he says, you don't need to explain your choices or justify them to Big Brother, nor do you need a government permission slip to exercise that right and make those free choices. Said Napolitano in conclusion, hey, there are no reasons, no actual legal, lawful reasons, to employ government power to assault personal liberty or cut constitutional corners in a free society, no matter what the exigency, no matter how important they think it might be to take away your God-given rights. The Constitution is about protecting our rights in good times and in bad. And the latter is certainly where we are, because now the supply chain has been broken. When it comes to the food supply chain, there's an aspect that's often overlooked. About half of the food equation has to do with things like restaurants. A lot of the distribution has to do with farmers that sell directly to restaurants and to places where they don't package the food in the same way they do for sale to retail customers. Farmers markets kind of being the one exception, but those are out only in the hinterlands. Representative Thomas Massie did a nice summary. He's warned that farmers and ranchers now have fewer places to sell their produce, their animals, the things that come off their farms. They also don't have the distribution channels. Those are shut down in a lot of cases. And they may end up having to let their crops rot in the fields or put down the livestock that they can't sell and distribute or even afford to feed. You see how this works? These are called nonlinearities. This is when the system starts to break down, the supply chains break down. And there's an interesting line from Mike Adams commenting on essentially the very same thing. You got people running the government, people that think they know how socialism works, that are so ignorant, they have no clue about how the economy was supposed to work. And what are they doing? Well, either deliberately or on purpose. Did I repeat myself? Yeah. They're screwing the entire thing up. And that is the really big issue here. They don't understand what they're doing, or the useful idiots don't anyway, but those that are pulling the chains, those that are doing the Bill Gates and Fauci and et cetera deep state kind of stuff are saying, oh, isn't this great? I love it when a plan comes together. We are destroying everything, getting people locked in their homes, telling them they can't even protest, can't buy seeds, can't feed themselves. Aren't we clever? Jim Rickards, writing for the Daily Reckoning, is one among many who has been pointing out, look, when this comes down the way it inevitably always does, get ready for social disorder. He quotes Ken Rogoff, whom he describes as a decent economist from Harvard, who's been pointing out that if you look at the debt-to-GDP ratios, they were at 105%. In other words, more debt than the entire national GDP in a given year, and that was before the crisis. But the hole is only getting rapidly deeper. So he says we got a short-term collapse coming. It's now underway, and it's probably going to rival or even exceed that of any recession in the last 150 years. The problem is that when complex systems like just-in-time delivery chains and all kinds of financial absurdities and mechanisms that have been set up to overrule capital markets, free economies, and so forth, begin to flail and fall apart and go non-linear. They interact, they collide, and they produce feedback loops, and this is where the black swans reside. And we're seeing the blackest black swan anybody's seen in 150 years. It's full-fledged global contagion. I don't have time to develop this, but he notes that literally it's a lot like the medical contagion. The symptoms go unrecognized if you properly craft the virus. Isn't this great? And you can get it widely spread before people realize how nasty it is and what's actually been done to them. That's exactly how the financial contagion works. And the comparisons between medical pandemics and financial panics are more than just a metaphor. They both work the same way. The nonlinear math and the system dynamics are identical. The virus, in this case, though, is a financial distress rather than the planned bioweapon biological virus. I guess if you're clever enough to see how to destroy the entire medical universe and people's immune systems with the genetically modified frankenfoods and the like, and then you can set up a financial system that is bound and doomed to fail, why not pull the plug and use both of them at once? What happens, he asks, when a biological virus turns into a financial virus? Answer, we're about ready to find out. So get ready for all of that, and expect what follows next, and Scripture is full of examples. Social disorder, because an economic breakdown is more than just economic. It leads quickly to a societal breakdown that, yeah, is also well-planned, and it involves looting, random violence, fraud, decadent behavior. You saw it in the Roaring Twenties and in Weimar Germany. We can expect to see all of that again. And yes, it'll be by design, so we better all know what the real law really is.